Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For Trent. Number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Tuesday to you there, everybody. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester, and we are live with you for the next 2 hours here on Sports Daily. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday morning. We got a big show for you coming up today. We will get to the Kansas City Royals and that magic number remaining at 8 after a loss last night. We'll have Mike Gillespie of the Kings of Kauffman on later this hour to discuss that. Looking forward, how safe are they? All of those good things for the Kansas City Royals are coming for you. We'll also have Dan Israel in of the Chiefs Radio Network. Big win against the Bengals. Looking forward to the Falcons, who had a win last night on Monday Night Football. Certainly they look much better in week two than they did in week one. And we'll talk to Dan about, you know, what do you do with the injury to Isaiah Pacheco now that we know about Hollywood Brown? How much does that change things? We'll have Dan Israel actually into the next segment, a little different time slot, but still here on a Tuesday. So that's coming for you. Of course, the IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240, taking your calls. You can also leave us your video comments on our Facebook, YouTube, or X stream here on the program. And of course, on 12 News Connected Plus. Glad to have you there. Glad to have you on the radio, on the Odyssey app, however it is that you take in the show. We appreciate you being here. How are you, Tommy? Good morning.
I'm good. Happy Tuesday. Looking forward to jumping into it today. I know we've got a lot to get to, and I love Tuesdays because we can talk both Royals and Chiefs on a Tuesday, and so we kind of are able to get that knocked out, you know, our Kansas City day. And so looking forward to talking both to Dan and to Mike on the program.
Yeah, it'll be good, and we may get into some more KU and K-State here as we've got reactions and things from the coaches coming in. So that's all on the table for you. We had Monday Night Football, and we'll get to the Royals because we've got Mike Gillespie coming up bottom of the hour, and we'll get to the Chiefs in the latest, but the next opponent for the Chiefs are the Atlanta Falcons, who played last night on Monday Night Football. Kirk Cousins with a last-minute drive to go down, drive the field, and get the win over the Eagles. I thought that was an impressive win for the Falcons. They can really, really run the ball, which is interesting. And they showed a little bit there toward the end of the game that they can throw it around a little bit. I thought Kirk Cousins found a groove, and that's going to be a pretty good team and a big challenge, I think, the first road game for the Chiefs. But Tommy, as we saw the Falcons last night, I think it's a knock on the Eagles. I think it was just a nice win, you know, for the Falcons on the road, and they went and got it. And that looks again like a playoff caliber team 3 weeks in a row now the Chiefs will have to play here.
Well, I do think that it is a little bit more about the Eagles than it is against the Falcons. I mean, I'm glad for Kirk Cousins. I'm glad that he was able to have that moment in prime time and with his new team and, you know, be able to lead them down the field for a win. But I mean, I think it's almost more disappointing for the Eagles than it is, you know, a big time win for the Falcons. I think that the Eagles disappointed for sure. This is a team that I feel like you know, they should have beaten. They should have, it shouldn't have been as close as it was down the stretch at home with all the talent that they have. I think that it's, again, a little bit of an indictment on the Eagles and specifically their coaching staff. I'm not bought in on them. I'm bought in on their talent for sure, but I'm just not bought in that they have what it takes to bring it together and actually, you know, continue to compete at a high level in the NFC.
I do. I think they didn't have AJ Brown. I think the Eagles, if they're healthy, the Eagles are really, really good. Now I think they've got to play better defense than they have been, but we knew the secondary for them was going to be a problem. You know, they've drafted a bunch of young players on the defensive line and in the secondary. And, you know, if they miss on those picks, it's going to be a problem. But I think Jalen Hurts looks better than he did a year ago. I think they added Saquon Barkley. And I think when you plop AJ Brown back into that offense, that's a pretty dynamic team. But, you know, health you can't take for granted, as we've learned in the NFL. As we get in the NFL, this bloodbath yesterday, Cooper Kupp is out. Of course, Pacheco with the Chiefs. You can't even keep up with how many players are out and missing significant
McCaffrey
time.
McCaffrey is out. He's going to be out for a minute.
It's everybody. I mean, it's everybody. Deebo Samuel will now miss games. It will be a battle of attrition. And that takes us to the Chiefs, who are fighting it right out of the gates. This battle of attrition. Drooling, I was, over the potential of this offense. Well, you don't have Hollywood Brown, and now you don't have Isaiah Pacheco for a while. So they'll have to learn, you know, and they won their first two games against really good teams. And they're going to have to keep sort of, I think, scratching and clawing. Whereas at one point, fully healthy, I thought they would win by big margins, Tommy. I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. I think it'll be more like last year. I think they are going to have to scratch and claw and do all of these things to try to just get through these games, at least for the next little bit. Now, if Carson Steele / Samaje Perine can come in and give you the production of Isaiah Pacheco, which I think is possible, then we're probably having a different conversation. But it's just going to be throttled down, I think, from what we hoped it might be in the offseason. But everybody's going through this right now. I mean, everybody is going through this right now. Team, I mean, it is insane through 2 weeks how many injuries we've seen, significant injuries we've seen this year in the NFL. If you follow fantasy football, like 8 or 9 guys in the first two rounds now are facing significant injury concern or players around them. It's just been wild. We've seen Tua out for a while. We've got backup quarterbacks coming in. Bryce Young gets benched. Man, what a nutty first couple of weeks in the NFL. And the Chiefs are right there with it, but they're 2-0. And that's what makes the Chiefs the Chiefs. They've got a ton of adversity themselves, and they're 2-0 against the Bengals and the Ravens.
Yeah, I've got a hard time thinking that the Chiefs are just going to roll with Carson Steele and Samaje Perine. I have a really hard time thinking that, and it's not a knock on those guys, but it's just mainly just a lack of depth. And I know that they've got a couple of guys on the practice squad. I don't know what the long-term status of Clyde Edwards-Helaire is. I don't think you can count on him moving forward. I have a hard time
in the short term.
Right. I just have a hard time thinking that there's going to be, just those couple of guys. And, you know, even if Brett Veach wants to move somebody up from the practice squad, I don't think that's going to be enough. Andy Reid did say that for now they're going to roll with the guys that they have. I would imagine that means in the short term, you know, it's those two this weekend. But also that Brett Veach has been, you know, crossing names off the list. It sounds like, according to Adam Schefter, Kareem Hunt has a visit scheduled in Kansas City today. And what that might look like, I don't know. The interesting thing about Kareem Hunt, there's a lot of interesting things, especially his history with the organization. But what I find interesting is that in my mind, I had kind of lost track of Kareem Hunt a little bit when he left Kansas City. I know that he played for the Browns. I know what he did. But like, I wasn't really fully paying attention to him during the times. I thought that he was a lot older than what he is. He's only 29. And I know in running back years, that's pretty old. But I thought in my mind, I'm thinking he's like 32, you know, or 30. Like, he's still on that right side of 30, which when I found that out, I was kind of like, wait a second, he's that young?
He's a little washed. He is not worth the trouble that would stir up to bring him back after, you know, what caused his departure from Kansas City in the first place. And let's be real about it. it would be fine. You know, fans aren't going to, you know, riot or anything like that. But if you're going to go down that, go get Jerick McKinnon, or, you know, like, go get somebody else. Like, it's not, I'll put it this way. Kareem Hunt is not going to walk on this roster and be better than Carson Steele at this point of his career. He's not. Carson Steele can do the exact same thing. I don't know if he can catch the ball like Kareem Hunt, but that's why you have Samaje Perine there. So I don't think that one is worth it, but it's familiarity, and the Chiefs are not scared of those types of situations, certainly. So maybe that's the way they go. We'll ask Dan Israel about it here in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take it. This is a quick segment because we're getting Dan in a little earlier than normal. So we're going to take a quick break. All of these questions for the Chiefs: what do they do? How do they look now? How do they refocus and regather? Problem at left tackle, problem defending the tight end to some degree, problem defending a mobile quarterback. They're not going to have that problem this weekend, but it is a little bit of a problem. So we'll have all of this for you as we make our way through. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, joins us next. All this football coverage on KFH presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. It's Sports Daily. All Brockton caster Dan Israel joins us next to talk a little Chiefs.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
And welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH, and we are happy to be joined by Dan Israel here. Dan, it has been an eventful start to this season. Bottom line, Chiefs are 2-0. By two toenails, they're 2-0. And no Hollywood Brown, no Isaiah Pacheco. It's only week three. This is insane.
No, and I feel bad because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, Pacheco's ability to get through an entire season the way he runs was difficult. I did not expect that it would happen in the month of September, but and it's a shame. This is a significant enough injury. Pacheco is a really good kid. He's a hard worker. You know, I mean, he was crying in the locker room. It's upsetting. And but the nice thing about bones is they tend to heal at a predictable rate. So I think, you know, the Chiefs can count on getting him back at a 6 or 8 week mark. The downside to that is they're not going to let him on the field with a leg injury as a running back until he's fully healed.
What do you think they do in the interim, Dan? I know Andy Reid talked yesterday about how, you know, they're going to roll at least in the short term with the guys that they have. But also that, you know, Brett Veach is probably making phone calls, and Adam Schefter reported that Kareem Hunt will be making a visit to Kansas City today. Do you think that, you know, regardless of whether we're talking 6 or 8 weeks or whatever that timeline looks like, that the Chiefs will bring somebody else in to be in that running back room?
Yeah, I kind of do, Tommy, specifically because of the situation with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, I mean, if you can't have three guys, you need two just to run the game, and that gives you no depth whatsoever. So I think it's fortuitous that they signed Perine. Samaje Perine is going to be, I hope, a valuable part of Pacheco's recovery, and that he and Carson Steele. And, you know, I think it's amazing that Carson Steele came out of the woodwork to make this team and really has a running style very similar to Isaiah Pacheco. And so I think it's great. I think what they have is capable of taking over, but I do feel like there's a depth issue there that they need to secure.
Yeah, I think it's enough too. It's what if Steele goes down that I worry
about
now.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so do you get the sense that they're that confident in Carson? I know he fumbled. It was a really good defensive play as much as it was a mistake, I think. But are they confident enough? I would guess, and you know more about this than I would, that they are, or they wouldn't have kept him on the roster and let everybody else go. That when they did that, that told me they were confident in his ability to step in if they need exactly this situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, they see him fumble and they realize that's a rookie mistake. You know, he's got to learn that when he gets turned sideways like that, how to secure the ball, you know, 3 points of contact and you carry it high and tight and all that stuff that, that running backs go through. I think the biggest issue with Carson Steele is going to be the running back's role in pass blocking and in the passing game, because a lot of these plays have that option, right, where we can pass to the back out in the flat. I just don't think they've probably seen enough out of him yet to say that they feel comfortable and confident. But, you know, we've seen on-the-job training before with this kind of situation. In fact, Pacheco was kind of that way, you know, but he came out of the gate so strong. And I think Steele's going to be fine back there. I think it helps to have Samaje Perine. You know, you've got a veteran presence there, and you've got somebody you can ask questions without him go to your coach and give away the ghost that you know, or give away the, you know, the bag that you don't know maybe quite what's going on. So I think over the next couple of weeks you'll see some growth and some mistakes, but I think it'll come together very quickly.
Well, we know that Hollywood Brown, you know, more than likely is going to miss probably the remainder of the regular season, kind of up in the air about what that timeline will look like, at least getting into potentially the playoffs and beyond. There were a few moments, Dan, in the game on Sunday that as I'm watching, I'm thinking, man, like Hollywood Brown would be a game changer, you know, it, depending on, you know, which play we're talking about. But there was like that one in particular, the Cam Taylor-Britt interception against Xavier Worthy, where Worthy is really fast, but he wasn't able to get any kind of separation from Taylor-Britt. That was an incredible interception. But in that moment, I thought, I don't know, maybe Hollywood Brown could have gotten some separation. How do you feel like the Chiefs' passing game is evolving and changing, especially knowing that they're not going to have Hollywood Brown for the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can lose a guy with the quality of player and the years of experience that Brown has and not feel it. Now, is the room devoid of talent? No, because you've still got Juju Smith-Schuster in there. We saw a huge play to Rice Sunday. That was a phenomenal, you know, throw and catch. And so you got Xavier, you still got Sky Moore. I mean, you know, let's see what Sky is capable of doing. We saw him out there in a couple of situations with the special teams. But I feel like it would be hard, Tommy, to not miss a guy like that. Unfortunate was the news that it's going to be all season. I mean, I can only suspect, certainly not a doctor, don't play one on TV, but I can only suspect that this injury just wasn't healing, you know, and that they had to, you know, kind of kick to an alternative of surgery. And it's a significant enough surgery that it's going to hold him out months. You do have we do stand the chance of getting him back at a very good time in the postseason. But man, it would have been nice to have him all season. He just looks so good at camp. I know Josh Klingler, my sideline guy, says, you know, we never had him. Just forget it. Just pretend like we never had him. It's like, I was at camp. I saw him catch those balls.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing to say. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that all season.
And then it sort of piles up, too, because we haven't seen Travis Kelce fully as a full weapon yet. And the problem I would see is Kingsley Sumataya just got dominated in that game. And if they're going to need to help at left tackle, whether it's Wanye or Sumataya, that probably limits how much Travis Kelce can get out there right now and be a pass catcher too. I don't know what the game plan against the Falcons will be, but they've run it more than they've thrown it. And even without Isaiah Pacheco, I'm not sure how much that changes until they can get Mahomes protected properly.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys. What do you guys think about? I to some degree, I think part of the game plan the last 2 weeks has been to tell these teams, hey, this isn't all about Travis Kelce anymore.
Totally.
And so I think that once they loosen up and they stop double and triple teaming Travis Kelce, we'll see him kind of reemerge. Cause that's what he saw all year last year, was sometimes three guys on him, and he still managed to be productive, which was amazing. But I feel like this is a concerted effort by the play calling to kind of remind teams that things are different this year and they're going to be different this year. And I, you know, it's the rope-a-dope, right? as soon as they forget about Travis Kelce being a primary target, he's going to light it up and go for 115 a game, you know?
going back to Kingsley Suamataya, Danny looked like a rookie on Sunday. And you know, 48 hours after the fact, my opinion on it, I think, has changed a little bit. I was angry kind of in the short term because I felt like it was pretty obvious that, you know, he was getting dominated, and I wanted to see some help. I wanted to, you know, even maybe see him be pulled earlier than what he was. After thinking about it for a while, I don't know, I think there might be a part of me that kind of thinks now, you know, he's a rookie. He took his lumps and they kind of threw him into the fire. And that sort of performance, that sort of situation may end up paying dividends in the long term. Do you feel the same way about what you saw out of him? Or is it something where, you know, he was just clearly overmatched and shouldn't have been in that position at all?
Well, I think all of those are a factor, because in the first 2 weeks, you've played some substantial defense. You know, you played against the Ravens defense can be just absolutely smothering. And you're talking about the Bengals, who, while they didn't play well in week one, they certainly played better against us, and their defense was getting things done. I do think Kingsley's making rookie mistakes. I somewhat was surprised that coach did sit him down. I think they felt he was overwhelmed enough that it was like, all right, let's get him out of the game so he can process this information, not in real time, and he can watch. And but the options there are, you know, I mean, it was great to see Wanya Morris catch a pass, but, you know, you're talking about guys that the left tackle is just not an easy spot, and it's not an easy spot to fill from a backup standpoint either. So he has to come up to speed quicker. I think the coaches expect that of him. I will say he's a smart kid, and I think the expectation there is worthy. I mean, you know, we had kind of peaked with Wanya, and it just wasn't quite where the team wanted him. But I don't think Kingsley's hit that yet, but he is struggling to learn. And unfortunately, in this league, there's just no relief from that, right? I mean, every week you've got to be on your game, and he's got to be a little faster. He's got to process information better. And he's just, there are just times when you have to out physical that guy across from you, no matter who it is. And, you know, he's going to play the Max Crosbys, right? You know, these are guys he's going to have to figure out a way to do battle against. But I do think it's awful young in his career to indict him yet. But I thought it was substantial that coach sat him down last week.
I'd like to see Wanya at least start. But yeah, I think it will be a combination of those guys. Dan Israel, Chiefs Radio Network executive producer, joining us for a weekly visit. We appreciate Dan's time. Dan, let's go to the other side of the ball. I would like to think it's solvable, but tight end defense is a big, big problem at the moment. Cincinnati, who Joe Burrow does not throw to tight ends. And Cincinnati acted like that is the basis of their offense. That game plan was effective for them, and they're going to play some really good tight ends over the course of a season. But I don't even know that it matters that they play a good tight end, because Cincinnati doesn't really have a good tight end anyway. Mm-hmm. How solvable is that? It feels like that would be something that you could solve throughout the course of a season, but maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I do think they'll solve it. I think it's a matter of striking the balance. You know, I think they're trying to protect that secondary in their concerns of the absence of Snead. And so what gets overlooked is that intermediate route, which almost all tight end routes start out as intermediate routes, right? Now, how they get 40 yards downfield without coverage, that's not right. And that can't happen. They've got to figure out a way to not let that happen. But I think that is a growth issue with the Chiefs defense right now, in a way that they'll figure this out in the month of September. That's the beauty of Spagnuolo, is he's such an active coach, and you know, things are going to get easier here a little bit for them, and so maybe they can grow. I thought Nick Bolton had a much better game. I still think the absence of Willie Gay here is significant. It's not just the loss of Snead, but Bolton had a much better game this week, I thought, and so we'll see if those guys can kind of continue to gel. The fact that they didn't get to play together a lot at camp and in preseason, I think, was a factor. And we've seen that on the opponent's side too, where, you know, the offensive line for the Ravens just was completely out of sorts penalty after penalty, and it was due to the lack of play. So I'm hoping, Jacob, that, you know, just playing together is going to improve that. But I do think Spagnuolo will be active in trying to figure out a way to shut that down, because you can't leave an opening like that. Teams will take advantage.
I'm glad that you mentioned Nick Bolton, because I agree with you. I think he had a much better game on Sunday. It looked like he had his motor back to an extent. And then really, I thought Trent McDuffie played a phenomenal game as well. It's really, we know the background with Ja'Marr Chase, and we know that Chase likes to talk. We know, you know, all the different things surrounding him when he plays Kansas City. I thought McDuffie did really a phenomenal job just sort of locking in and you know, kind of taking Chase away to an extent. To me, after watching kind of what happened in the secondary against the Ravens, it was encouraging to see not only Trent McDuffie step up, but then also I thought Shamari Connor had a phenomenal game as well. So at least, you know, as we're trying to, I know there's been a lot of like not ideal things happen in the last 48 hours for the Chiefs, but looking silver lining, looking positively, I'm encouraged by, you know, what I saw from the secondary overall.
Yeah, Ja'Marr, I thought, had a great game and really played well, had the scoop and score. I think anytime you get a receiver the stature of Ja'Marr, the one thing that when he melted down, I mean, that comes from frustration. And so the defense must have been getting under his skin enough that he had a complete meltdown. The guy has been in the league long enough to know you don't mess with referees. You know, he's just never going to win that. Whether it's words or whether it's hands, you're never going to win that. So I thought that was interesting to see the level of frustration he was at. And you got to give a little bit of that to the defense, you know, for keeping him in check the entire game. Now, I'm sure his situation with Cincinnati is in play there too. That's got to be frustrating. But I thought a much better performance this week overall from a defense, even from the defensive line. I thought Chris Jones was getting more effective. Like George Karloftis was playing much better. And I just felt like overall there was a better performance in week two than week one. So I'm excited to see the progression there.
One more for you, Dan. We talked about that tight end defense. Kyle Pitts is there. Kirk Cousins seems to be loosening up. Bijan Robinson is there, a talented back. What did you see from the Falcons last night as it pertains to the Chiefs? That on the road feels like it's going to be a pretty tough matchup on both sides of the ball, quite frankly.
Yeah, they played very well last night against an Eagles. I don't think the Eagles are quite the team they were. I think the loss of Jason Kelce was significant. But they're still a very good team, and certainly Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback. And to play them at the link, to play them in Philadelphia as strong as they did, was surprising to me, frankly. They may be pulling that team together quicker than I anticipated. You know, I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins fan, but I think he played well enough last night to win, right? And so you take that same game back home, you automatically get a bump for it being your stadium. Now, can the Chiefs go in there and win? They can. They're a better team than the Falcons for sure. But I think it's going to be maybe not quite the cakewalk that we thought it was going to be.
I agree. It'll be, and it's another primetime game now, the second in 2 weeks. We'll see if they do anything at running back of significance. And in the short term, is probably going to be the Carson Steele P. Ryan Show. Dan, we appreciate it. That Falcons game is got me pretty fired up. I think that's going to be fun. I'm glad they bounced back last night not glad for the Chiefs, but they certainly look better than they did in week one.
You know, the one thing, Jacob, I'll give Coach Reed and really the locker room in general, they like playing good teams. They'd rather play strong teams than weak teams because they know iron sharpens iron. That way. And so they're probably very excited to go down there and play them a better team than what it was. As a fan, I like the, you know, my heart's a little, I'm 60 years old. Those close games are getting to me, man.
Well, listen, all of these things we've talked about, like their issues for the Chiefs, they're 2-0 and they beat the Ravens and the Bengals.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, that's the margin in this league.
Could be a couple of critical tiebreakers too. So, it's quite the lead. You're talking about the Bengals are 0-2, the Ravens are 0-2, the Titans are 0-2, the Chiefs are 2-0. So, yeah, it feels like the driver's seat early in September. It's despite the bad news. So it's good things for us as fans.
All right, Dan, we appreciate it. Go Chiefs. Good luck. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Go Chiefs, guys.
There goes Dan. Drill. Tommy, that's the crux of this, isn't it? The 49ers lost a game. The Eagles lost a game. All of these teams right now, you know, the Texans almost lost a game to the Bears, struggled. Is anybody right now, like, who? And I would say you got to factor in the injuries to the Chiefs in this discussion, too, at this point. Like, is there a clear heads and shoulders favorite at the moment as we look across the league? You know, after week one, it was like, okay, it's the Chiefs and it's the 49ers. Well, fast forward about 7 days and the Chiefs are without Hollywood Brown and Isaiah Pacheco now for significant time. The Niners without Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel for a little while. So, okay. I mean, the Texans are the team that haven't had any significant injuries, I suppose. But
you know who the best team in the NFL has been through 2 weeks? The Saints have been the best team in the NFL.
The Saints, yeah, and maybe the Vikings. Yeah,
If you're just looking at straight figure. Up differential, point differential, it's the Saints. I mean, they've put up 91 points in 2 weeks, and they've only given up 29. What they've done, and of course, it's extremely early. It's 2 weeks into the season, but from a division standpoint, the NFC South, at least through 2 weeks, looks for real outside of the Panthers, because you saw what the Falcons did last night. The Buccaneers are 2-0. They look really good. And then what's going on with the Saints? I certainly didn't anticipate that.
I can get over, like, teams losing games when they're not supposed to. That doesn't throw me off very much. It's these injuries that are throwing me off right now. Like, I'm trying to, like, sort just through that across the league. Just wild, wild, wild. You mentioned the Saints. One of those wins was against Panthers and the others against the Jekyll and Hyde Cowboys. But I've been impressed by them for sure. Panthers, though, are moving away from Bryce Young.
Uh-huh.
Two starts into his second year as a starter. And here we go. I want to talk about that because I told you I've been, like, fascinated by Caleb Williams. And by the way, here's a fun stat Brandon Zinner had for me yesterday. And I don't know where he got this. J.J. McCarthy right now is tied for the lead in rookie quarterbacks with touchdowns thrown.
That tells you about the rookie quarterbacks that are out there
right
now.
Yeah. It's been rough for the rooks.
It's been bad for Bo Nix. It's been rough for Jaden Daniels. It's been rough for Caleb Williams. I mean, he's taking his lumps right now.
I want to go through that because I want to compare all of them to Bryce Young. And what I don't remember a number one overall pick looking as bad as Bryce Young has looked. And I hate that because I like that guy. But he looks awful. And he's getting benched for Andy Dalton. If Andy Dalton has a pulse, he will find his way to starting games in the NFL. You can count on that. And he's now the starting quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. We'll touch on that. We've got Royals talk. The magic number is at 8. That's coming up top of the hour. We'll have Kings of Kauffman Mike Gillespie in to talk about that for us. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Great golfing weather out there. It's a little warm, but hey. You'll take it. You got those nice, cool mornings. They got 36 holes of golf for you to choose from and all the other great amenities, the tennis, all of it. Great clubhouse. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. Tommy and I are both members. We love it. Families love it. Take a tour. Check it out. We appreciate their support of Sports Daily. We'll come right back. What in the world's going on with these young quarterbacks? That's next. Quarterbacks in general in the NFL, quite frankly. It's next on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Set up our text to win contest here. You can win a free iced tea from HTO. More than 20 flavors to choose from of sweet and unsweet iced tea. Best there is. And a coffee drink, iced or hot, including the new fall flavor options, the butter pecan mocha or the dirty chai apple crisp. All for you. You can win one of each right now by texting to win the keyword tea. Your number is 20357. Just text the keyword T to that number, T-E-A, and you can win one of each. These are good for all three of the Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. All right. So we're talking about young quarterbacks here as we transition, as we saw in primetime, Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud sort of became that next one, right? We saw, you know, Mahomes, and then we saw Herbert, and we saw Burrow, and all these young quarterbacks succeeding for a while. And then we see C.J. Stroud, and it's like, okay, he's the next guy, and I think he is. And then everybody else has really struggled. Caleb Williams, I don't know how much I am fascinated by him as a prospect, because I really liked him as a prospect, I don't think he's looked particularly bad. I think his offensive line is atrocious. If you watch that game against the Texans, I mean, it was laughable how much fire he was under. But I think he looked like his body language, everything to me for him looks okay. And then you look on the other side with Bryce Young, last year's number one overall pick. And Tommy, I'm not sure that I've ever seen a quarterback look more lost back there. And he's been benched now for Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, comparisons on social media between the two. And I think it's unfair to Caleb Williams because we're talking about two games as opposed to Bryce Young is in his second season now.
I don't think Bryce Young's ever looked as comfortable as Caleb Williams, even in his struggles, has looked through his first two games.
Well, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a massive Caleb Williams fan. I remember, like, I was the guy that said that the Bears should hang with Justin Fields and not make that trade. You know, so I don't ultimately believe that Caleb Williams is going to be this superstar in the NFL. But I do think that he absolutely has looked better through two games than Bryce Young has looked in a year and two games. There's no doubt about that. As far as, you know, other rookie quarterbacks, it's difficult because there are a couple of other ones. You mentioned C.J. Stroud. I've always been big on Anthony Richardson. Yeah, had it not been for an injury last year, he got off to a really good start and has looked okay, you know, so far in his second year. So I don't know. I think that like there have been some other circumstances that, you know, you can kind of point to. Trevor Lawrence is another example of somebody that came out with a bunch of hype, and you know, he's put together a career that, again, I would say is okay at best so far.
Meh.
But there really hasn't been that big step forward from somebody like Trevor Lawrence to be able to, you know, solidify himself in the top tier of NFL quarterbacks. So it's tough. It's really difficult when you are trying to assess who your new franchise quarterback is going to be when you take a really, really high draft pick to bring that person in and you're basically strapping the hopes and dreams of the franchise long term onto their backs, whether or not it's going to pan out.
I mean, it's bad right now for quarterbacks in general. The numbers are down again, and they were down last year too. And I don't know what that is or where it's, you know, coming in. But it's not just the young quarterbacks. It's kind of everybody right now. Rick says that none of the quarterbacks should play as rookies, Mahomes and Brady, and they're better because of it. I don't agree with that completely. I do think if you can afford it, sitting them is a great path to it, but I can't watch what C.J. Stroud just did as a rookie, what Justin Herbert did as a rookie, and you know, say, yeah, that they shouldn't have been starting as rookies. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. I think if you're going to start as a rookie, what Caleb Williams is looking at this year is about as good as you can do. Now, their offensive line's terrible. And if they don't protect him better, he's not going to stand a chance this year. I don't know that it's going to get any better, but that was rough to watch. I mean, he was absolutely under fire on Sunday night. So hopefully that gets better for his sake. Bo Nix, he doesn't have a lot to work with. He's the other one everyone keeps looking at this year. And Jaden Daniels, I think Jaden Daniels is kind of right where I thought he'd be. Like, he's going to make some plays, but it's going to take him time to develop as an NFL passer.
I think really out of the four that are, you know, on active rosters right this second, I guess Michael Penix Jr. is technically on an active roster, yeah, but I don't count him. I think I am most happy for Drake May and the situation that he's in right now in New England because,
yeah,
you know, they've kind of allowed him to be able to get acquainted and acclimated with the NFL. It helps that Jacoby Brissett has you know, played okay through the first couple of games.
If you're going to watch a quarterback, he's a good one to watch.
It is. And, you know, I know that Jerod Mayo, I think it was yesterday, talked about how Drake May in practice it's kind of a 70-30 split right now. And so they're really trying to bring Drake May along with the understanding that he will be the quarterback for the Patriots. And Jacoby Brissett is kind of that placeholder, that bridge quarterback, if you will. And that, at least for right now, has worked out decently well for the Patriots. Nobody expects the Patriots to be a contender right now, so that sort of helps things a little bit. You know, they're not expected to jump out and be this, you know, dominant team. So they have the opportunity to bring Drake May along and take their time with his development. I like that, as opposed to a Bo Nix or a Jaden Daniels just kind of being thrown into the fire.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's in a pretty good position to succeed there. I don't disagree with that at all. It's a strange time in the league, in this league where quarterbacks mean everything, that they have struggled as much as they have. And I don't know what to make of that. And, you know, I do think the good thing is we know why Mahomes has had issues. We just went over it with Dan Israel for a long time. Joe Burrow looked better, right, this past week, certainly. I think they're coming around, but these injuries aren't going to help. We're not going to see Matt Stafford look very good, right, with all the injuries. All of the quarterbacks, when you look around, I do think Jalen Hurts looked better last night. I think he looked significantly better than he looked last year. Kirk Cousins, I was worried after the first week. I was worried about after the first half last night. He found a groove a little bit. They got a lot of weapons in Atlanta. Atlanta's a pretty good team. The way their defense is played, that's a pretty good team. He looks like he's going to be good. I just want these quarterbacks to be awesome, though. Jared Goff hasn't been particularly good yet this year. There's a better league when the quarterbacks are good, and the young guys right now, just whatever defenses are doing that's making it tough on the older guys, it's making it really tough.
I think that also, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. And again, I know it's only 2 weeks, and this relates directly to us talking about kind of the best teams in the NFL through 2 weeks. Derek Carr and Baker Mayfield are a couple of quarterbacks that, you know, nobody would have thought going into the year that they would be top 10 quarterbacks. They're right now, they're pretty close to that. And if
Geno
not in
Smith
there,
is the other one.
Geno Smith has looked good through 2 weeks.
Really good.
The Seahawks have been relatively quiet. They're probably the quietest 2-0 team in the NFL.
They're going to be a fun team to bet for a while, I would suspect. They didn't even have Kenneth Walker in that game, by the way. One common thread for those quarterbacks you just mentioned, their players are all healthy. I mean, they got all their weapons. I mean, it could be as simple as that, too. A lot of these quarterbacks that have, Joe Burrow hadn't had T. Higgins, Patrick Mahomes doesn't have Hollywood Brown. Like all of these, you know, big time, big name quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts last night didn't have A.J. Brown. Brock Purdy won't have Deebo Samuel. So we'll see. It's been an interesting start to the NFL season. Maybe next week will be a little chalkier when we go to bet it. We'll have PJ Glasser on later this week to talk through the strangeness from a betting perspective. The underdogs demolished this week, including the Falcons last night. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little baseball. We're going to talk a little Kansas City Royals with you. Mike Gillespie joins us from Kings at Kauffman. The magic number remains at 8 as they drop one to the Tigers. So we'll keep our eye on that. We appreciate Prairie Fry Coffee for fueling us up here every morning at KFH and around the Odyssey family. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little baseball when we return on Sports Daily.
This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are getting ready to talk a little Royals baseball, which is available for free right here on KFH and the Odyssey app. You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240 KFH tonight at 7 o'clock after the Chiefs Kingdom show for Royals Tigers. We'll join in progress. Simply download the Odyssey app, search for KFH at game time. Jacob Albrock here, Tommy Kester. We are going to talk Royals as we welcome in from Kings of Kauffman, Mike Gillespie, joining the program again for a weekly visit, a Royals insider. We appreciate Mike's time and insight as the Royals drop the first one to the Tigers. Frustrating loss because you had a big-time offensive performance, but Seth Lugo was not good, Mike, in that game. The magic number remains at 8. It's not going to feel, we're not going to feel relief until that magic number is 0, I don't think. As promising as things still look, each time you lose, it still makes you just cringe a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, it seems like every time Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month. Brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We watch the Royals now. We're pretty comfortable. Until the bullpen gate swings open, and then, you know, things just kind of deteriorate. I had a story up this morning where I actually wasn't all that tough on Lugo. He wasn't Lugo type Lugo, you know, but he worked out of a jam. He was getting the outs, and then the fifth inning came. He got into some trouble, left with a lead, and then the bullpen came and. You know, unfortunately, couple that with some failure to get some timely hitting in the final innings, and you know, you've got a game where you have to say we didn't gain any ground, but in the grand scheme of things, they're still in good shape.
Mike, I really, for me, after watching this team the last week or so, my biggest takeaway, I think, has been just having a steady presence in the leadoff spot from Tommy Pham. And there have been a handful of games where he has produced for the Royals offensively. I know last night he was 1-for-5, but in a season where there's just been such a revolving door and musical chairs at that leadoff spot, having somebody that you can just pencil in that you know is going to bat leadoff and more often than not produce at a higher clip than all the other guys that have rotated through that spot in the lineup. To me, I think I think it's not being talked about enough. And I think that it's something that can be really important for the Royals as they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree completely. He's been a very welcome change, probably more welcome to Matt Cotrero than any of us. And it's nice to see, you know, game after game, the same guy leading off, doing good things. You know, he's not setting the world on fire, but you get the idea when he comes to the plate that the chances are really good that he's going to make something happen, and it'll be a good thing that happens.
Yeah, I we all kind of wanted him in the first place anyway. I think that's been what do you think? I mean, Mike, the Royals, JJ Piccolo's on a heater, I think. The offseason that they had, which is as good as you get, especially for a small market team, to bring in the pitchers and the players they did. The trade deadline moves that they were able to make despite a lacking farm system. And then when the injury bug strikes late, a couple of creative moves to bring in more play. Like he has navigated this thing as well as you could ever hope. When we think from the end of last season to now, how many different things he and the front office have had to do to reconstruct this thing. It's been pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the season, no matter what happens, that's going to be one of the things we all look back on and say, wow, what a nice change. You know, Dayton Moore had his moments, but Dayton Moore was also too inclined to stick with what he had. You know, he was extremely loyal to players, didn't want to make a lot of moves, but Piccolo, even though, you know, he studied at Moore's right hand for so many years, Piccolo's his own guy. And I think also you have to give some credit in all of this to John Sherman, because, you know, at the end of the day, we all have our bosses, including Piccolo. And it's pretty clear that John Sherman has said to him, go out and do what you need to do. Now, if you need to spend an incredible amount of money, let me know and we'll talk about it. But other than that, do what you need to do. So I think give Sherman some credit too.
You know, it's kind of a broken record, Mike. You know, every time we've had you on, there's a conversation about the bullpen, and rightfully so, because it's just been it's been an issue. It's been a struggle for a while. And now really the injury bug has flared up again. Chris Stratton is on the IL. James MacArthur left the game last night with elbow tightness. Actually, when he left the game last night, the first person I thought about was you, Mike, just because of our conversations about MacArthur. But, you know, even despite the struggles that we've seen from both Stratton and MacArthur, losing two bullpen arms that have been a part of your bullpen the entire season is a knock, you know, to the Royals bullpen for sure. I know they recalled Zerpa, you know, back to rejoin the bullpen. But where do you assess just the overall depth of this Kansas City bullpen right now?
Well, there isn't a lot of depth. And, you know, I wasn't surprised last night with the Twitter and other social media reaction to MacArthur's injury, and you know, all these people saying that that's a good thing it's happened to the Royals. Well, really it isn't, because if he goes on the IL, that's going to be a problem, because there's two sources that Piccolo has right now. One is the waiver wire, and who knows, you know, that's a crapshoot to see if there's anybody even on the waiver wire. The second source is Omaha. And, you know, 11 games left, fighting for a playoff spot. Sisk is pretty good down there. People keep talking about Jonathan Bolin. I'm not sold on Bolin. I never have been. But, you know, to pull Sisk out of Omaha right now and bring him up and throw him out there and say, get it done, That's a tough ask, but as I wrote this morning, that may be where they have to go. They may have to dip into that Omaha bullpen.
Mike Gillespie joining us, Kings of Kauffman, at Kings of Kauffman on X, kingsofkauffman.com. Tracking the magic number right now for everybody. It's at 8. MacArthur may struggle, but if you needed a strikeout right now, Mike, if you were in a situation where it was strikeout or bust, I do still think he's pretty close to the top there in that regard, you know, for that one thing. His stuff is still, it's still as good probably as anybody that's not named Ursig or Bubich at this point. I'm with you guys. I think that could be significant.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And I think that people also actually kind of forget about Bubich, because, you know, he's in such a new role. He's not entirely established yet, but he's done well. And, you know, the sleeper in that group, as far as someone that they may have to rely on even more is Daniel Lynch. You know, he's getting it done.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that when you look at the number of bullpen pitchers that are, you know, currently on the IL, I mean, obviously we just mentioned Stratton and you know, then you've got Hunter Harvey, who continues on the IL. Will Smith is on the IL. Michael Lorenzen continues on the IL. So to your point, yeah, you're clearly dealing with depth issues just with the pitching staff in general. Do you anticipate, and I don't exactly know the status of each one of those players that are currently on the IL, are any of them, do you think, just completely done, like we won't see them again even in the playoffs, or are most of those guys who are currently on the IL from a pitching perspective, do you think the Royals will have at least available when the playoffs come?
You know, from everything I've seen, they're really not talking at all. You hear nothing about Will Smith,
yeah,
except, you know, he's on the injured list. Almost the same with Hunter Harvey. I'd be surprised if we see them back. Lorenzen looked like he wasn't going to be gone for long. Now the Royals are saying as of last night that, you know, he had a short session yesterday just playing catch, and they're going to wait another 2 or 3 days to see how he feels. You know, that takes you to the end of the week.
Yeah.
So I'm not confident that there's anybody on the injured list now that we're going to see back. And even if we do, they're not going to probably contribute a lot.
I was just going to ask you about Pasquantino, and I think that answers that question. So I want to ask you about Bobby Witt Jr. instead. Since the calendar turned to September, Bobby Witt Jr. has a hit in all but, I believe, 3 games that he's played in. So you like that. A lot of those are one-hit games. Hey, not all the way back yet, but we see the Grand Slam last night. He's getting a little more active. We had a stolen base mixed in there last night as well. It feels to me, Mike, like he's revving it back up right at the perfect time. Do you get the same sense from the king of Kansas City right now?
Well, I'm trying to get that sense, obviously, because the Royals aren't going to go very far with Bobby Witt's bat being cold. And, you know, admittedly, I've been kind of hard on him. Even though it's tough to be hard on him, you know, he went into last night's game hitting .219 with a sub 300 on base percentage over his last 18 games. But there's that, you're right, there's that he seems to get a hit every game. Some of them have been big hits, like last night, but you know, I don't see him slumping till the end of the season and into the playoffs. I think he's going to come around. And in fact, you know, like I say, I kind of harped on him a little bit in a story this morning, but I've got another one coming hopefully for later today that's a little more optimistic, but I think he's going to be there.
You know, going into the first game of the series last night against the Tigers, the Royals were 4 games back at the Guardians in the division with 12 to go. After last night, they're now 5 games back with 11 to go. So that's a tall order for the Royals to overcome. I felt, you know, in 4 games with 12 to go is tough also. But I felt like at least going into the series, if they could make some noise against the Tigers, it could be something that, you know, maybe at the end of this week and early next week, they're back in that race a little bit. If they could trim that gap down a little bit, they weren't able to do that. The Guardians won last night. You're never going to hear in the clubhouse anybody say that they're throwing in the towel on the division, but 5 games right back with 11 to go is difficult. That cushion in the wild card is now, I think, what we all switch our attention to really fully, and just making sure that they continue with, you know, a sizable cushion and lead in that wild card. Knowing what we've seen over the last several days or so from Kansas City as they continue this series against Detroit and then moving forward, do you think that, is there anything that stands out to you as a major red flag as to them potentially not keeping that cushion in the wild card?
You know, not really. I'm a little leery of the weekend series with San Francisco. You know, that the Giants aren't really going to aren't going anywhere. But that, you know, that's I hate to use the term trap game or trap series, but it concerns me a little bit. And as far as the division goes, I think the Royals' only hope there is the fact that the Guardians have three games left with Minnesota. And then they finish the season.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
And with the Astros. And the Astros are one of the best teams, you know, since early in the season, since, you know, they got off to a slow start. But that's the Royals' hope. They got to get, for that division, they got to get an awful lot of help. I don't think it's probably going to come from Minnesota, but let's hope it does. And Houston does some damage to them, too.
Mike Gillespie, Kings of Cop, and one more for you, Mike. If, let's just say the Royals, it finishes and they sit right where they sit right now, in that second wild card spot. Remind us what that means. What does that mean for their, how they would open the playoffs? That's a, is that a road? Because the rules keep changing. What is the path, if that's the path they take?
Well, you know, you get into all this, you know, tiebreaker stuff and who plays where. If I had to bet right now, and I was just looking at this morning, and, you know, most of the pundits are saying, who knows? Even though you can get a pretty good picture right now of who's going to be in the playoffs, the puzzle is pretty complicated as to where they're going to be. Right now, I'd probably put the Royals on the road, but I'm still up in the air on just where that road is going to lead and who they're going to play.
it's let's just get there. How about that? Let's just get there.
Yeah.
See if the Royals can get back to the postseason. See if Bobby Witt Jr. can get hot. See if they can lean into that good starting pitching and get on some kind of a run. All Mike's work you'll find at Kings of Kauffman. We appreciate it, Mike. One more of these wild weeks, and we'll probably have a whole bunch of answers next week. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll have to sweat it out a little bit longer, but we appreciate it here. Thanks for joining us on Sports Daily.
Thanks, guys. Always good to be there.
There goes Mike Gillespie. Check it out. It's a race still. It's not over yet. And boy, you'd just like to see him put Detroit away. That would be nice because Detroit's pesky. I don't know what else to say about them other than they're pesky right now, Tommy. But you'll hear it again right here tonight on KFH.
Yeah, it's a different team than the Pirates are. I mean, you look at both of those teams' records, and on paper, they look pretty similar. But Detroit is a better team than Pittsburgh is. Pittsburgh has talent. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I think Detroit is a little bit further along in that process. And at the beginning of the season, I would have put Detroit a little bit better. I think I probably would have had them over 500. I think AJ Hinch has done a good job in rebuilding them.
Incredible job.
They haven't executed. They haven't gotten the wins that I think that they expected. So even though on paper their win-loss record looks fairly similar to Pittsburgh, it's a different team than the team the Royals faced on the road over the weekend.
It's Reagans and Marsh in the next two Reagans tonight, but they go up against two pretty good pitchers. Mize is not bad. His numbers aren't incredible this year, but he's a pretty good pitcher. And then Scooble, who might win the Cy Young, is who they get in the finale on Wednesday. So be an interesting series. You know, Scooble's looming, adds a little emphasis to tonight's game, because then you potentially face a sweep and Scooble on the mound. And that would be something the Royals certainly don't want to see. So that game tonight, you'll hear it again right after the Chiefs Kingdom show on KFH. We'll step away. We'll catch our breath. It's been nonstop here out of the gates. That IHOP hotline is back open for you at 869-1230. That's available. We've got talk for K-State and KU as both coaches talk yesterday. Anything there we're taking away as they open up Big 12 play this week? That's where we'll go next on Sports Daily. Don't go away. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you, catching our breath. Our thanks to Mike Gillespie for joining us to talk a little Royals baseball from Kings of Kauffman. Our thanks to Dan Israel for joining us here on the program as well. All kinds of fun stuff for you to go back and listen to for free on the Odyssey app. So be sure and do that if you haven't downloaded that in the past. We put it right out there for you in podcast form. Makes it super easy to take in parts of the show you might miss. We know not everybody's driving around in their car all the time. That's why we love the Odyssey app. That's why we love 12 News Connected, too, by the way, to go back and watch the program as well as we make our way through. All right, Tommy, KU this weekend, we can start there, and we'll begin very brief overviews of what we'll get this weekend. We spent a little time with K-State yesterday, Wyatt Thompson joining us. KU, West Virginia. Look, we sorted through some difficult discussions yesterday as it pertains to what KU can do to salvage this thing. There's a lot of problems to solve, but it is the start of Big 12 play. UCF's 1-0, but basically everybody's 0-0 in conference play. We know in a new 12-team playoff that a conference champion from the Big 12 is going to get in. Now, are they going to get an at-large? Time will tell, but they're going to get a conference champion in. So knowing that, what can KU get accomplished in this game to turn things around? I think we all look at the offensive coordinator and say, better figure it out. West Virginia is not a terrible team against the run through three games. They played Penn State, oddly, where Andy Kotelnicki is now. They had a heartbreaking loss at Pitt in their biggest rivalry game last week. They're giving up some yards on the ground. They're giving up 122 yards on the ground. It's kind of, it's not terrible, but it's not great. They've been worse against the pass. But even with that, as you're looking at this, I don't know if Daniel Hyshaw is going to play. We didn't get that update. It's still a question mark yesterday from Lance Leipold. I don't think anything changes in the way we all want to see the game plan, right? Make them stop the run. Make them stop the run and take the pressure off of Jalen Daniels as he hopefully gets things sorted out.
Yeah, I want to see Jalen Daniels pass the football, I don't know, maybe 10 times, 15 times.
18 would be max. Yeah.
I don't want to see him taking 20 plus pass attempts in this game at West Virginia. Now, I would love to, you know, see him have some designed runs that would, you know, kind of counteract that a little bit.
I'd like to see him run it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, if you can see those pass attempts drop and maybe the rushing attempts increase, I think what was happening quite a bit in the game against UNLV on Friday was when he was running, by and large, he was running because a play had broken down or he was scrambling, improvising, that sort of thing. And then as soon as the UNLV defense adjusted, when he was improvising, he felt like he couldn't get anything done with his legs and he had to throw on the run. And that's when some of those bad reads and bad passes were being thrown. So I think you've got to account for that a little bit. You mentioned Daniel Hyshaw. I think that played a larger role against UNLV than anybody really expected it to, because he's a different kind of running back than Devin Neal is. Devin Neal is going to be able, you know, to bounce outside of the tackles. He's going to be able to, you know, make guys miss. Daniel Hyshaw is a bulldozer and he just runs over you. And so it's a change of pace running back that the Jayhawks have. And that 1-2 punch has always been with those two guys when they've both been healthy and both playing in the same games. It's been extremely effective for the Jayhawks. They didn't have Hyshaw in the game against UNLV. It's still kind of up in the air if they'll have him this week. And it's been a little vague about exactly what's going on with him. I know that it was a sickness, and that's why he missed the game on Friday. So I don't exactly know what that means moving forward. But regardless, I think that you need to have that change of pace to be able to complement what Devin Neal does. Because when you've got Devin Neal, who is a great running back, But it's predictable. You know what he's going to do. You can, as a defense, you can kind of zero in on that and just take away, try to contain Jalen Daniels. That's going to be a whole lot easier for defenses than if you have Hyshaw in there too.
I don't know, obviously the Jalen Daniels thing is the hot button issue right now. Grimes, everybody agrees on it's a problem. He better figure it out. But when I look at it, and again, my struggle with all of it is, as it pertains to Jalen Daniels, is I just don't have a clue how the other guys behind him have looked. No idea. But what I can settle on for sure is a three-headed running attack, if they get Hyshaw back with he, Neal, and Hyshaw, that should absolutely be the way KU runs this offense. Not just because Daniels has struggled so much as a passer this year, but because that allows their defense to be the best it can be too. Even if Daniels wasn't struggling the way that he struggled, the path for KU to be a hard beat is for them to play really good defense and control the lines of scrimmage through the run game. That's why we've all been so frustrated at the play calling, or, you know, the decisions at the line of scrimmage from Daniels so far to throw the deep balls or whatever. Like, just run the ball, make them stop you. And if your defense is as good as we think it is, you'll have the time to be patient with that, right? Like, you don't ever, if your defense is really good, you don't ever have to abandon the run. You just don't. So don't do it, especially when what's killed you in the last two games are turnovers, right? And one busted play at the end of the first half in the game. Like, the margins have been so thin. Just run the ball. Eliminate the things that can beat you by running the ball. And Jalen Daniels showed us one thing in the positive, and that's that as far as his health, he looks fine, and he looked explosive running it. Now, give this three-headed attack a chance to come out, take the air out of the ball, control the clock, do all those things. Like, this is the on the road, especially in that place too. Like, this is the time to do that.
There were a bunch of times in the second half in that Friday night game against UNLV that when things were not operating well offensively for the Jayhawks, that I just kept thinking, man, they keep giving UNLV really short fields, and they are putting their defenses back up against the wall over and over and over again. There's not a whole lot more that I think you can expect from the Kansas defense. They had a valiant effort in that second half, limiting what UNLV could do, but eventually it just got to the point to where they couldn't keep it up over and over and over again when the Kansas offense was putting them in bad situations. I was really proud of the KU defense, but there were so many times that I kept thinking offensively for the Jayhawks, look, we don't even need you to score. Just get some first downs and flip the field. Just do that once. Because I might be remembering this wrong, but like three or four different times in the second half, like back to back to back to back, where it was a three and out, or there was a huge loss or a big penalty that pushed things back. And then all of a sudden they're punting and it's setting up a really short field for UNLV. And by and large, again, the Kansas defense held their ground for the most part. But eventually they just couldn't keep that up.
The most depressing thing about the game on Friday to me was that when KU got the ball at the end of the game, everybody in the building knew they had no chance to go down and score.
Yeah.
Everybody knew it. They had zero chance and they had plenty of time. And that is a problem. That's a big problem. So what can they do in the short term? I don't know. What can Jalen Daniels do to knock this rust or whatever this is off? I don't know. Is anybody behind him remotely close to challenging his position? I don't know that stuff. We'll ask Shreyas Lotta tomorrow. In the short term, though, no matter who is under center for KU, KU's path, I think, has become more clear now, Tommy, to not matter as much as who's under center. That's a tip of the cap to the defense. It's going to be running the ball. It's going to be utilizing Devin Neal. It's going to be utilizing, in some capacity, hopefully if he's out there, Daniel Hyshaw. And if it is Jalen Daniels, it's going to be utilizing him as a runner too. Now, he's still going to have to be able to make some throws. Time will tell what that looks like. But when you get into the Big 12, we've seen it so many years with K-State, so many years, you just run the ball and play good defense. Maybe you get a good special teams play. It may not be the sexiest way to win, but it is a winning formula. And right now, to me, it's the only formula that I think I can see in the short term.
It's the most logical formula. I agree with you on that. And I know that you and I disagreed on a lot yesterday when we were talking about Kansas. I agree with you in that regard, because in the past, I think I mentioned this yesterday, in the past, the Kansas defense was such a liability that you couldn't afford to do that. Right. You had to have as many possessions as you possibly could. It wasn't like control the tempo, control the ball. You needed to score and then hope that you got the ball back to go and score again, because the defense was such a liability. They were opportunistic even a season ago, but they weren't as solid as they have been through the first three games this season. And so they've got to rely on slowing the pace down a little bit. I don't think there is a single KU fan on the planet right now after three games that would be upset if the Jayhawks just ran the crap out of the ball, even though it's significantly different, a departure away from a high-flying offense that we've seen over the last few years. Basically ever since Andy Kotelnicki was calling the offense, it's different, but I don't think anybody really cares. That's going to be the most effective way. And I do think that if you can take that pressure off of Jalen Daniels by not only, we always talk about establishing the run, it's not just establishing it, it's being consistent with it and keeping it going.
Force feeding it,
then by all accounts, you'll probably soften up the pass a little bit, take the pressure off of Daniels. Hopefully there's some more creativity and play calling, even with in the passing game, to where then you are setting Jalen Daniels up for more success. The way that I land on all of this, and it was pretty heated yesterday on this show, but really, simply put, where I land on all of this is that Jalen Daniels has not been great. He's not been who we've known him to be in the past. But I also feel like I really want to see him in a situation where he's set up to succeed. And I don't think we've seen that with Jeff Grimes playing calling the plays. If, like, let's say that in this game in West Virginia, things change from a play calling perspective and they do everything that we just discussed. And in theory, it should set Jalen Daniels up for significant success, and he still struggles, then at that point, I can have a different conversation. But I want to see that first.
That's where we've differed on. I am not advocating for Daniels to not be the quarterback yet. Now, I'm close, but I'm not there yet for a lot of those same reasons. But, if it was as simple as whichever quarterback, is a better fit with Grimes than Daniels. My whole point with all of it is that Leipold owes the rest of the guys on the roster and the fan base at least doing everything within everything within his control to have this team be the best it can be, because everything's still out there in front of them. If it, you know, if we were at a different part of the season and the playoff wasn't still attainable and all of those things, I'd probably feel a little bit different. But I think there's a level of desperation right now that should still be very tangible. Whereas, and I get this and I understand why this happens, and I totally get it because we get frustrated as fans, that the fan base is saying this season is cooked, it's done, they have no chance. I get it. But the reality is not that. That's not the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is that they absolutely do still have a chance. And I'll say this, I know that, again, it's like a logical, not an emotional perspective. Even if they were to lose this game, a one-loss Big 12 team is still going to reach the Big 12 championship game. So even if they were to lose this week, and let's say Jalen Daniels goes out there and he doesn't play well, now it's even more desperate, because if you lose another one, then you're not getting it, right? Two losses is the absolute max, probably historically in the Big 12, at who's going to reach the championship game. So while the championship game is still out there, now is the time for desperation, not 3 or 4 weeks from now, when then you can say the season is done, right? Now, at that point, the season's over. I think the desperation needs to come now, not then, in doing whatever it is that I don't care what it is, whatever it takes to get to that point, because that point is still attainable for the team.
I think I told you this when we were texting after the game on Friday night, and I think I summarized it, at least my feelings on everything is, yeah, Jalen Daniels has not been great, but he's not getting any help from anybody else.
He's not.
And so it's kind of like, and I know I tend to do this where I throw really corny old sayings out there, but I'm going to use another one. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, so it's the bathwater's been bad, right? Like the play calling has been bad. Don't throw the baby out with it. That's Jalen Daniels. Now, at some point, if this continues and the play calling has changed, I was most angry about, it looked like early in the game on Friday that they had figured out the play calling and they were doing things that were a little bit different. They were giving Daniels an opportunity to be explosive with his legs and get into the end zone and all of that. As soon as UNLV adjusted defensively, the Jayhawks, like, they panicked. And it was just like, oh, what are we going to do? We're just going to have to throw a bunch of passes. And, like, that was not the recipe for success. And we just kind of reverted back to what we saw in the Illinois game. So that's why I was most angry. If they can get that shored up, and I really hope that they do, I have complete trust and confidence in Lance Leipold to take control of this situation and make it better moving forward. I don't have any equity built up with Jeff Grimes, so I don't have faith or trust, because I've never seen him do it for this team before. But it's Lance Leipold that I'm putting my faith in. If they can get it worked out, if they can get the play calling figured out, and this weekend they do that and they implement it, but Jalen Daniels still looks bad, then come Monday, I'm willing to have a different conversation.
So I thought about this after the discussion yesterday, and a good comparison is last year, right? So, and it goes to, like, how much do you owe any particular player when things are on the line? Will Howard last year, there was a point where a lot of people wanted Avery Johnson to take his job. That's coming off of a season where Will Howard went and won the Big 12 and looked like he was going to come into the following season as a Heisman candidate, very much like we thought Jalen Daniels might this year, finally healthy. It didn't take very much poor performance for the seat to heat up. Remember, Avery Johnson was playing significant time pretty early in the season while Will Howard was struggling. And so I think...
It's not an apples to oranges, though, because you had a highly touted freshman pushing him behind him. And, I mean, Avery Johnson last year and Cole Ballard this year. Avery Johnson last year and the upside, the potential, and Cole Ballard this year are not the same.
Wait, man, maybe it's not Cole Ballard. Maybe it's their freshman quarterback that they like. That's where I've got to talk to Shreya Slaughter or somebody who has seen these guys, if it's even possible to see them, the young guys and what they have looked like. I mean, there's a thousand. I just don't, that to me, there's nothing wrong. And if Jalen Daniels can't handle it, then I don't know. And I think that he could, by the way, But even if it's just a catch your breath, hey, whatever, Ballard, you've got the next drive. Like, you know, all the mix and match. Like, because that's what K-State had to do to get Will Howard through it last year, and he handled it fine. And by the end of the year, we didn't see Avery Johnson. And so even that path for me is okay. Maybe somebody else is understanding what Grimes is trying to cook up, but I don't care. I just don't want to punt on the season now and be stubborn with it, because they can still win the Big 12 championship.
And you know what?
And again, I know that people laugh at that because of the way that they've played, but I can't throw out everything we've seen building over the last 3 years right now to say that they have no shot to win a Big 12 championship.
The other thing too, from my perspective, is that while I'm not an advocate to make a change at quarterback permanently with a new starting quarterback for the Jayhawks in the UNLV game, every time late in the game, especially in the fourth quarter, that Jalen Daniels came back out, you're damn right, I was like, man, let's see what Cole Ballard can do, because it wasn't working in that particular game. In that particular moment, especially that final drive, when, like you mentioned, and I agree with you, because I was in the stands at Children's Mercy, nobody around me, including myself, had any confidence whatsoever that Kansas could move the ball down the field and even get a field goal to force overtime. Like, that was not even in the cards. Everybody around me, myself included, were like, oh, they're bringing Jalen back out. And it, for me, it wasn't a, man, they just need to sit him forever and Cole Ballard just needs to be the guy. For whatever reason, it's not working right now in this game. Let's give somebody else a shot to see what is happening. And even though that was my thought process in that moment, as soon as the game was over with, not one time did I think Jalen Daniels should not be the starting quarterback moving forward.
No, I don't care about moving forward. I don't care about 5 weeks from now. I care about game one.
I'm just saying that I think both things can be true. I think that in that moment, I can say, give somebody else a shot to see if they have more success against UNLV's defense. But then also Jalen Daniels is my quarterback.
Or with this particular game plan. And KU's not even, like, look, there have been times where Jason Bean and KU and Jalen Daniels were kind of both the quarterback.
Absolutely.
We've seen that work.
There was a period of time back before Lance Leipold was the head coach, in the Les Miles era, even in the David Beatty era, where every single depth chart that came out at quarterback had an or next to it. Like, it wasn't a first team, like second, it was this guy or this guy. And you didn't even know. Sometimes you would have to wait until pregame introductions and look out on the field and see who's warming up to know who the starting quarterback was going to be. That's happened in the past, but that was when they didn't have capable quarterbacks, really, and they were just trying to figure out, like, what would work in the moment. It's different these days, but of course, KU fans are used to that sort of thing.
These things can make, like, you can rise together. That's what we saw in Will Howard and Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson got significant playing time. Will Howard got figured it out, and it was better for K-State. So we'll see. Again, run the ball a lot in this game, including with Jalen Daniels, if he's going to play the whole way. Let's talk about K-State when we come back. Initial thoughts as we look ahead to their game. No question who the starting quarterback is there. An award for Dylan Edwards we'll tell you about, and a number that is just wild for him so far in the season. Talk a little K-State football when we return on Sports Daily.
97.5 and 1240 KFA.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you on this Tuesday edition. We are glad to be here with you. That IHOP hotline open, 869-1240, brought to you by IHOP. Our text to win contest is out there for some HTO. Just text 20357, text the word TEA to get you a shot at that. So we talked to KU. Tommy, here's an interesting number. K-State yesterday, Dylan Edwards named special teams player of the week after that punt return. First running back to return a punt for a touchdown since Darren Sproles back in 2003, which is kind of fun. Here's what's wild about Dylan Edwards so far to me with K-State and why I'm becoming more and more bullish with that offense. He has four touchdowns, Tommy, four touchdowns on the season. How many times do you think Dylan Edwards has touched the ball so far this year?
Not a ton. It's, in three games, I want to say, like, what? Less than 20, 18 times? 22.
So Essentially what you have happening is 25% of the time Dylan Edwards touches the ball, it's a touchdown.
Yep.
So And I don't have, honestly, I don't have as much of an issue with his usage as a lot of people do, because I know it's coming and I know that it's going to unlock as they go. And I know how much of a weapon he is in the return game. And I know as his opportunities go up, so do K-State's chances of big plays. But they also have DJ Giddens, and they also have Avery Johnson, who's got to get some touches. And so their offense feels like it's only now scratching the surface of where it could be as far as explosiveness goes. I'm far more concerned about their defense, and this will be a really good test for them this week. But this Avery Dillon storyline that we love so much for the two local kids, obviously, and everybody around here is paying attention to, man, it looks like it's going to be as good as we thought it was.
What I love about just the running options that the Wildcats have, it almost kind of, you know, mirrors where I think we'd both like to see Kansas get to, is that three-headed monster running the football. But the Wildcats have been able to execute it in a much better way. And I'm kind of with you. For a while, I was not really concerned, but I'm like, man, they got to get more touches to Dillon Edwards. He's too explosive. He's too talented to not give him more touches. But at the same time, this philosophy is working for them, where DJ Giddens is the workhorse. He is the every down back. He is the guy that is reliable, that you hand the ball to, and that he's gonna get you the yards that more often than not you need. But then a change of pace type guy with Dillon Edwards comes in and catches the defense off guard because he does significantly different things than what DJ Giddens does. And then, oh, by the way, you have to keep in mind that Avery Johnson is back there too and can take off at any time. That's where, honestly, I'd like to see KU get. They're further behind that than the Wildcats are. And that's a credit to not only Chris Kleiman, but, you know, the way that Connor Riley has, you know, jumped in and running that offense, and, you know, Matt Wells being involved in the offense too. They've been able to get these three guys on the same page and put a game plan together where really it leans into all three of their strengths, and it's worked out really well through the first three games.
And Edwards isn't going to bloody you like that. Like, I like him in space right now, and that's what they're still working on. And the more that Avery runs it, the more space that's going to open up for Edwards when he's on the field. But we'll get into that. We've got Tim Fitzgerald coming up on Thursday to talk K-State football. We've got Shreyas Lotta coming up tomorrow to talk KU football. It'll be a fascinating week, I think, for a lot of different reasons as the Big 12 gets things opened up. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up today. A lot going on the networks, a lot of times that we'll plan on pay attention to. If you're planning on listening to any of it, we'll tell you about it next on Sports Daily.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.